Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Welcome to the Truth to Power Show. This is your host, VJR Nathan, and this is Radio Free Brooklyn. On today's episode, we're going to be welcoming Stephanie Berger, who is a poet, multimedia artist, event planner, entrepreneur. She's the CEO of the Poetry Society of New York and co-creator of the Poetry Brothel, the New York City Poetry Festival, and the Typewriter Project. She is the author of In the Madame's Hatbox and translator of The Gray Bird, 13 Emoji Poems in Translations. Stephanie's poetry and translations have appeared in dozens of magazines, and her work has been covered in dozens more. Other honors include Artist Residency at the University of West Florida, and 2015 Now Writing Award, and grants from Lower Manhattan Cultural Council, New York Community Trust, etc. She received her MFA in poetry from the New School and taught in the English department at the Pace University and Berklee College. To book a Stephanie reading or inquire about her work, you can reach her at sb@poetrysocietyny.org. So please stay tuned for our interview today. Thank you. At the end of the interview, I'm going to be talking about my experiences at Landmark Forum and my journey, my personal journey, as well as giving an invitation to the listeners of this program, a special invitation to listeners of this program. So please stay tuned for the full episode. Thank you. So this is the Truth to Power Show on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm your host, VJR Nathan. I'm here with Stephanie Berger. I'm going to start the conversation with a question about your background and where you were born and where did you live most of your life and growing up?
Okay, yeah. Thanks for having me on the show, by the way.
Yeah, great to have you.
Thanks. So I grew up in San Diego, California. That's where I was born and raised. My parents were both professors. My mom studied French history, so I spent a lot of time in France growing up. Went to school in Paris in third and fourth grade. Yeah.
So you went to school in Paris? Did you move there? Or?
Yeah, we lived there while my mom was doing research for her book on the gardens of Versailles.
Wow, that's very interesting. And how did you start to get into poetry, or what was your influences early on? Was it early on that you started?
I started writing. Well, I think I started speaking poetry from like a very, very small age. My mom actually said that I used to like come and wake her up in the morning when I was a super little kid and just whisper like random words into her ear one at a time. The first poem that I ever remember writing, I was 8. It was called Dog and Cat Baseball at Sunset, and it was about a team of dogs and a team of cats playing baseball against each other.
Excellent. So I think a lot of times people think of poetry as being so formal and so academic. It's nice to see that you recognize that you're kind of fostering the idea that poetry can just be, you know, as it's the kind of spontaneous spontaneous production of verse or spontaneous production of. So can you get a little bit more into like you get more of the lens through which you're seeing kind of these things and seeing it in the form of poetry, right? Would you say? Or
sure. I mean, I definitely really respect people who are able to create poetry spontaneously. I would say that isn't necessarily me personally, just because I tend to revise and edit my work like quite a lot. But the Poetry Brothel, which is like one of my main projects, is very much improvisational, both in terms of the poetry and then also just in terms of the show itself and the interactions between people. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the poets involved in that show do spontaneous poetry. I do sometimes do spontaneous typewriter poetry.
Uh-huh.
So that's one thing that I kind of enjoy. I did that in September for opening ceremonies, New York Fashion Week event. I sat and typed poems out for people in the lobby to the event.
Excellent. And before we get to Poetry Brothel and I just want to continue on the kind of the trajectory of life and how you kind of your personal journey into poetry and how your influences along the road before before establishing Poetry Brothel.
Yeah.
So as you started to grow up and you had the influence of your parents being in academia and, you know, learning all the cultural things, was there an injunction or a major point in your life in college or that you started to really percolate with a specific school, or was it always been kind of spontaneous, more like that kind of thing? Or was there any particular schools that of poetry that you kind of really grew into?
Well, so one of my parents' very good friends growing up was Jerome Rothenberg, mm-hmm. Who's kind of like the father of ethnopoetics. So I guess I feel sort of tied to him and that tradition, just having like grown up around that person. They were also good friends with David Anton, who is like more of a conceptual poet. So I think I've always thought of poetry as, you know, something that goes beyond the page, that goes beyond even just like the performance of the words. Like, there's so many different things that you can do with it. So, I feel kind of rooted in those two traditions in a way. My father was also really into poetry and wrote a lot of poetry, and he was a huge fan of like Ezra Pound and T.S. Eliot. So, you know, part of my connection with my father was around like kind of, you know, those like super established, like elite modernist poets.
Yeah. And then when you go into like when you move into like a spontaneous verse or spontaneous thing, what is guiding you, or what is the compass that you're using to determine kind of the form, or give the verse form, or what is kind of when you spontaneously?
When you say spontaneous verse, you mean spoken word?
Spoken word, yeah. That's okay. A good way of putting it. Yeah. Because I think of spoken word more as like memoir based, but if you can expand a little bit more on kind of how your vision, or how the vision that you've been taught of poetry, how that is defined, or how that can be
I don't think of myself personally as a spoken word poet. Yeah. That isn't really like the tradition of poetry that I came up in, which I think is different than a lot of young people nowadays, because a lot of people do come up like through that spoken word tradition. But I think just because I had this kind of like unique childhood where I got to spend time around poets in academia, even, you know, which is not something that most people get to do. I came at it from kind of a more, I guess I want to say academic perspective, but the kind of academic perspective where it's like historical. So I'm not just, you know, kind of rooted in like the American classics.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And also what I was trying to get at was that the idea that a lot of people seem to think of poetry as like very structured you know, A-B-A-B kind of, you know, this kind of rhyming having a structure of meter.
Oh, so like
all
free
these
verse.
Kinds of free verse. I definitely think that you're kind of in that tradition of free verse.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but even within free verse, it seems like there's a lot of rules and a lot of, you know, structure to it. Mm-hmm. So when you think about spontaneous kind of going up on a stage and kind of spontaneously reciting lines, that it's almost like an improv based. Would you say, or how is it, or they have like in improv too, there's also like a structure of like, you know, you're kind of hitting certain beats and you're responding or paralleling with certain scenes. So I'm curious of how the process works when you spontaneously are creating verses like throughout your life, or like,
I don't do that kind of spoken word. Yeah, no, I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I sit and compose my poems for the most part.
Yeah.
I sit and write them.
Yeah,
it's difficult for me to compose poetry just by speaking it. That's not something that I personally do. Other poets that I work with a lot and collaborate with do that, but that's not an area where I feel like particularly confident, I guess. I know how to improvise as kind of like an actor person, I guess. But I don't sort of combine that with my poetry. My poetry is definitely something that I write down, and I can compose sort of spontaneously writing. But speaking it, I don't do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, I just clarify that, because think as when I went to, I'd gone to, just to skip ahead, that you'd establish about the talk about the Poetry Brothel.
Yeah.
When you establish that and the guiding philosophy is when you talk about how you establish the poetry brothel and what age or what time period. 10 years ago, it's the 10th anniversary of the establishment of poetry brothel. So you can talk a little bit about your establishment of that with the circumstances.
Yeah, so I mean, so the poetry brothel obviously is incredibly performative, and there are a lot of poets involved in the poetry brothel. I would say like probably a good like third of them who do spontaneous spoken word. But part of the reason I actually like started the poetry brothel in the very beginning was to create a reading series where like complicated poetry, poetry that gets, you know, edited to death, and poetry that is like a written poem, where poetry like that can be accessed by like a more mainstream public. Because my feeling is that poetry is better one-on-one. So one of the main things about the poetry brothel, in addition to these like very performative moments that we have on the stage, is the element of the private reading. And the nice thing about a private reading is that you're sitting next to the poet, and if they're reading to you out of their journal, for instance, as an audience member, you can be looking at that journal with them, and you can be reading the words on the page and sort of like talking to the poet about them. And it's a way to make written poetry a little bit more fun, intimate, engaging, accessible. Because my feeling was that that there were a lot of spoken word events that were like, you know, pretty lively and fun in New York City 10 years ago, but there weren't a lot of poetry readings like within the more academic sphere that had any kind of, I don't know, jubilance and like liveliness to them. They were all kind of like buttoned up. So I decided to unbutton things a little bit with the poetry brothel.
Yeah, definitely. There. I see that because I'd visited the holiday party.
Yeah.
I got the chance, the fortunate opportunity to come to one of your parties, one of the poetry brothel's parties. And the experience was that one of the conducive of, you know, jovial or party atmosphere, kind of. They had a, you know, performers burlesque. Mm-hmm. They had acrobats and such doing like a performance as well as some readings. Mm-hmm. And definitely I agree that the private readings that you model after, I guess, the language used is kind of mimicking what we see is in the kind of adult entertainment strip clubs or brothels, using the John, you know, the person who's getting the reading is considered the John, and then the reader comes and goes to a side room, and you receive kind of an intimate moment where you're like, you're listening to the person read a poem. And it kind of creates that kind of intimate space that you're talking about. That I definitely agree. And I would say the question would be just that, you know, the idea that you're bringing together the purpose of poetry, mainly to make that human connection, and how you facilitated that process, you know. And we can talk a little bit more about the creation of it as an organization. So I understand there was some kind of steps you had to do to create Poetry Brothel, and then Poetry Society of New York was the umbrella organization. We'll talk a little bit about that process. Yeah.
Sure. So I started the Poetry Brothel with my creative partner, Nicholas Adamski, about 10 years ago now, while we were at the New School. A couple of years after that, we had some money coming in and out of the poetry brothel. You know, we were selling tickets and we were paying performers. And so we decided that we wanted to open up a business checking account. In order to do that, we had to form a business. We tried to form a business called the Poetry Brothel, and the state of New York was like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And we were like, why? And the state of New York was like, a brothel is an illegal activity. And we were like, oh. So we thought of the name the Poetry Society of New York because we thought it sounded about 200 years old and like very established. And we asked them if the Poetry Society of New York was okay. And they said yes. So we became the Poetry Society of New York just to establish a production company for the Poetry Brothel, essentially, initially. And But the funny thing about that was we had been we had started applying for grants and residencies and things like that for the poetry brothel for maybe a year before that, and hadn't had any luck. Nobody had wanted to work with us at that point. And as soon as we became the Poetry Society of New York, we started applying for grants and residencies, and we started getting things. Yeah. So that was kind of funny. We ended up getting a residency for the Poetry Brothel on Governor's Island. Governor's Island has like these old colonial houses all over it that used to house officers in the military. Mm-hmm. And so we turned one of these houses into the poetry brothel. We put, you know, four beds in the four bedrooms and turned the parlors into luxurious smoke-filled dens. And we created an immersive poetry brothel on the island every weekend for a month. But when we first went out there to look at the space, we noticed, like, how incredibly beautiful Governor's Island is. We hadn't actually been out there before, and it is just filled with like giant lawns of green grass and just like gorgeous 100-year-old trees everywhere. And Nick and I had been talking about wanting to start some kind of poetry festival, kind of just in passing before. It was kind of more like, I can't believe New York doesn't have a poetry festival. But then we thought, we looked a little bit into doing events in parks because we had wanted to do the poetry brothel in Central Park one summer and discovered that it's very expensive to do a ticketed event in Central Park or Prospect Park or any of the NYC parks. We looked at these, you know, giant lawns of grass and we thought, what a perfect place for the festival. Since we were already doing a residency out there, we asked Governor's Island if it would be all right if we did a festival out there. They said yes, and that's how the New York City Poetry Festival was born. And that is the second main project of the Poetry Society of New York. This mm-hmm. year, 2018, will be our 8th annual festival. And the New York City Poetry Festival is just a gathering of all of the poets and all of the audiences for poetry in New York City, all of the people that we can muster. It's totally free and open to the public. Anyone can host a reading at the festival and curate a group of readers if they have some kind of collective or magazine or organization. There's an open mic. There's a kids festival. It's kind of, you know, it's supposed to have like a summertime fun like music festival vibe, but mm-hmm. for poetry.
Yeah. So. And I've been to one of the festivals where they also have like readings, tarot readings, or like like psychic readings, this kind of thing along those lines. So there's lots of other arts that seems like the performers engage with that are related to the vibe that I get from this
definitely.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
I think a lot of poets are really interested in tarot and kind of various forms of mysticism. I think that they're kind of interrelated.
Yeah, very drawn to that. But why don't we take a moment to listen to a poem of yours, and then we can come back to the conversation. But I'll give you a chance to give a little intro to the poem, and then we can go ahead, and then when you're ready.
Okay, sounds great. I think I will start with a poem called Nothing Land. It's a poem that was published recently in Pouch magazine, and it goes like this. Nothing Land. Enter the landscape like a bride. When they gasp, assume it is your beauty they are gasping at. When they cry, pretend it is your love. Entering the gorge like a groom, and you wait for a long time for the river to rush into you. On the bluffs, above the crag of your soul, I am trying to capture the magic of discovering a pomegranate tree where there was none. I am trying to give up the notion of likeness altogether. I laid down in the lagoon like a straight flush, like a child bride. So baroque, She was the end of art, flaunting and squandering its resources. Now she keeps a little blue dream on a shelf like a bottle of brandy. Visions of the infernal feminine surging inside, you drove a painting of a bright blue truck through a hailstorm in my head. Now my heart is a canoe in the middle of a lake with no paddles. With nothing commercial in her appearance, she was still a gleaming toy of history, a luxury of literature. The voices of two men chattering ominously in the distance, the echoes made tantalizing by their shortcomings. Who are you when no one is watching? How is a canyon like a writing desk? They both blow smoke, oh gentle fire. I am waiting to be blown in some direction. The way the shadow of the showerhead at work resembles a jellyfish, so too does my own head work. Generically gypsy, she grew weary of preparation and connection and illustration, of trying to screw up the courage to fall into his soft funereal hands. It's all a surface. Grief so shallow you might enjoy it in time. I hope to think aphoristically, aristocratically. Dear me, am I walking? I suppose I must be. I am learning to be lively, to stimulate my appetite. How did I come to such a deep knowledge of pleasure? Through a deep pleasure in knowledge, the Greeks called an unmarried woman an anecdote, the definition of which was not yet set in print. She was about to draw the lines out on her thighs and on the sheets and multiply and divide herself by a broad-chested body of water, by a stroke of exquisite simplicity and singleness of heart. She wandered until a honey-colored moon appeared overhead.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah. So nice, so evocative with the language and such a great images. It creates imagery.
Thank you. So now
poetry brothel, also you're talking, you kind of mentioned a little bit about the typewriter inspired things. If you can go a little bit more deep into kind of the other associated projects that Poetry Society is working on, in addition to poetry brothel, you mentioned a little bit of typewriter. If you can go a little bit more into that, a little bit more.
Yeah, sure. So we started the typewriter project back in 2014. The typewriter project is a series of interactive art installations. Basically, we put a little like wooden writing studio for one in various places, parks, art galleries, bookstores, kind of anywhere. We put a typewriter inside. The typewriter is augmented with digital sensors underneath the keys, so all of the text becomes computer-readable text, and it all goes directly to a website, subconsciousofthecity.com. And so the idea is that anyone can sit down and type on this typewriter. All of the text also goes onto a 100-foot-long scroll that's going through the typewriter, so you get like the physical document, which feels like very archival and historic or something. And then you have all of this text also just getting like kind of shot up into the cloud and onto the internet. So, the idea behind it is to basically kind of discover what different places sound like, what people's subconscious sounds like in those various places. We also kind of just wanted to give people the opportunity to type on a typewriter because it's actually really fun. And I think that it makes you write in a different way just because of the quality of the keys, the sound that it makes, knowing that you can't just like hit delete. It makes you like stop and think about it more, I guess.
So the people are just coming in, kind of writing a few lines, and then the next person might come in and add to that. They're able to see previously what's been written.
So it becomes kind of like a collaborative diary or collaborative poem. Mm-hmm. We were kind of inspired by the concept of an exquisite corpse, which is a surrealist writing exercise where like many different authors will contribute to a single poem, and they'll pass the paper around so that you can only see the line that was written before yours. Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. I think it's great to be able to have the audience come in, where participants come in and approach, you know, poetry, which sometimes can be seen as very, you know, out there, or very kind of scholar in a book, and kind of engage with it and be able to participate with it and have their own imprint on it. As you're saying, that subconscious, being able to see and get a temperature of like what people are going through, what people's on people's minds in different areas. So it's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been cool to have the project in a lot of different places at this point, because we've done maybe like 15 different installations of it at this point. Most of which were in New York City, but we also did one down in Raleigh, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, the things that people were writing down there were just, you know, leaps and bounds away from what people are writing here. You know, it's just a really interesting way to kind of discover what's on the minds of people in various places.
Yeah, I'm sure that, you know, if you're interested in expanding it, that as you go on to different areas, you'll see more and more of a divide of like how people think differently, or how people, what the temperature of different people's thoughts are in that moment, and how they're able to explore those moments, you know, through this page. So it's all on the internet as well as on Subconscious City said, or
subconsciousofthecity.com. Oh, great, great. It's all up there.
Yeah. So also what I want to talk about was, you know, the themes of the show seem to be about the kind of connecting the personal spaces with more political or more like kind of a society, the public narrative that we have in this country and in the world. So it seems like your work towards bringing breaking that divide between the kind of scholarly and the intimate, you know, it seems to be working towards that kind of demystifying poetry and showing it to be accessible to the public or to people in general who seem to sometimes, you know, think of it as very kind of in the olden books and classrooms or something like that. So if we go a little bit more into like how it's been over the past 10 years, you know, how the feedback and how your audiences have responded to this idea of that bringing that intimate space into their lives.
It's been really amazing having, you know, audiences for the past 10 years coming to the Poetry Brothel and stopping to type on the typewriter project and having people have just these incredibly positive experiences with poetry when, you know, the majority of the time they'll say, like, I've never met a poet before, or I've never written a poem, or, you know, I haven't written a poem since I was 16 years old, or I haven't read a poem since I was 14 years old. And, like the people that come to the Poetry Brothel, honestly, for the most part, like, are not poetry people. Like, some of them maybe were like English majors or whatever, but I think a lot of people come to it because they think it sounds mysterious and strange and unique, and they live in New York City and they want to do, you know, these like wild and crazy things that you can only find in New York City. And so they come, and I think that people tend to be like genuinely surprised by how like moved they are. In addition to being entertained, like they also end up having these really like special connections with people through poetry, and that it just makes me feel so good. It gives me goosebumps thinking about it. So it's nice.
And also, I understand that the you guys also offer the opportunity for like private events and such, where you can host them or do event planning for that.
Can
talk a little bit about that. And
absolutely. That's something that we've been, you know, expanding and trying to grow more and more recently. You know, we have 10 years now of event production experience. Like, we're pros. We're like really, really good at putting on an event and a show. And and, you know, we want to bring poetry to people in like new and innovative and crazy ways. So, yeah, we have become available for hire for various poetry services. If, you know, you're a company that wants to incorporate some poetry into your advertising campaign, like, we are down to help you with that because we want to bring poetry to more people, you know. So we do private events. We do, you know, custom poetry. We can send poets to your event with typewriters or diaries or, you know, whatever you want, really. Mm-hmm. We're open to talking about things.
Yeah, good, good. And just to circle back about your own journey towards this this organization and such. So now, while being the madame, if you will, I think the title you use, how has that developed your own, and what have you written since starting this? How has that developed your own practice in writing? And talk a little bit about your practice in writing, your personal practice in writing, and how it's developed the past 10 years. And I think you've written 2 books. If you talk a little bit about your books and what they're about, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, that's a good question. Yeah. I guess I would say that before I started the poetry brothel, I think that my work was maybe a bit like lighter and more funny and kind of, I don't know, experimental and strange. And since I started the brothel, I've become like more and more interested in connecting with like my inner power and like my inner goddess, and, you know, being trying to like reign over an event like the poetry brothel as the madame can be very intimidating. I mean, I'm a poet, you know, I grew up like being a little bit introverted and, you know, more of a writer than anything else. And so finding a way to like connect with, you know, the powerful goddess in me through poetry has been something that's been like a big part of developing my poetic practice over the past 10 years. I think the madam is supposed to be like kind of an eternal creature. She was conceived at the beginning of time, and she's like a mother to the muses almost. And the poetry whores are muses to her, I guess. And
so just to clarify for the audience, this is all the personas that the performers take on in part of the poetry brothel. So you come in and they have like a persona they're using that they have like a bio for, and then one of those personas is the madame that you take on. Other performers take on other bios where they have created like a persona for the stage.
Yeah.
In which case, just to clarify for people listening who may not be familiar,
Okay,
sure, sure.
Definitely, yeah. Everybody in the poetry brothel creates an alter ego. And that's kind of just to, like, I don't know, free people up in a way. Like, exposing yourself in that way by reading, like, poems that you really care about to total strangers can be kind of scary and intimidating. And if you, like, create this really like powerful character, it's kind of easier to do that in a way. And we always draw from this Oscar Wilde quote. He said, "Man is least himself when he talks in his own person. Give him a mask and he will tell you the truth."
That's great.
And that's what the alter egos are all about. Just like having the mask so that you're free to like really say what you want to say and be who you want to be.
Good, good.
Yeah.
So why don't we listen to another poem? We'll take a moment just to listen to another poem. We can have a few more questions before we close. And then I'll give you a moment.
Okay, sounds good. Let's see. A beautiful boyish insouciance. Everything tough was a nail, and that was it before the flood came. Remember that time I had my aura read in the street on a sunny fall day, and it was a pool of silver and lavender and turquoise, and the woman hugged me and I gave her a cigarette? That was this morning. Do you remember the morning? Vitriol and violets, football and waiting and screaming for our eggs. losing the cargo, the slippage, the impersonated planet became tame. I have never ever been, we've never, and I can't keep sipping on the sip cup. You can't keep me in the slips like this. You can't keep me there and there, mounted like a flame, her delight in the dream of possessing this man. It promenaded straight without care into the domain of beauty, which does not sleep, but lies awake at night, dreaming with eyes open. Those eyes, when she chose, she could flood them with languors, sublimate Paris into a tropic frame, wet, trenchant, bellicose, pugnacious, but never frowsy. The melting measures proceeded, and the ice in her stare gave way to steam. It was as if she had dropped a curtain. My body holds a heart that cannot love. It holds another heart that cannot help but love. They are conjoined twins and all in black. Nothing but a pernicious, diseased animal. I want to fuck you with the most engorged part of my soul. Put it inside you. I am the man here, cerebral and happy, bad and abroad, bored and supportive, watching these women who are always walking by in their bodies. But I hate to boil it down to oversimplification. I would love to be focused, honest, and hardworking. I can't go on a date with you. Not today. I am too far away from the planet. Excuses fly like birds, and I saw them flying in your eyes. Literally, you stared into my eyes and I saw birds. But it's not like it was an intensely emotional experience. It was a nice morning.
Good, good. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Very beautiful. Thank you. So as you close up, I just want to talk a little bit more about kind of, you know, I think that there's definitely a lot of charged vocabulary, I think, for some people. And but I think that what we're kind of hearing from you is that the idea of empowerment, you know, because some people, like, you know, they think of brothels being very kind of a charged, triggering word. But I think that what I've kind of gotten from you is that the idea that the performers and the people involved are creating intimate spaces where everyone involved can feel empowered to be themselves truly and find those spaces within themselves to access for their own writing and empowerment.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you can expand a little bit more on kind of the themes of empowerment in your philosophy and the philosophy of the poetry brothel, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that so the term poetry whore has been like triggering for a lot of people, I think, especially recently with like everything that's been happening in the media. We've been, you know, hearing from people about that word more and more, and actually having more and more conversations within the cast about it. The term poetry whore, like the reason that we use that word is to like reclaim it and turn it on its head to make whore like a word that means like a goddess, you know, that means like a muse, like an amazing woman and person. And we understand that we're being inflammatory, you know.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a little bit of a provocation. It's supposed to make, you know, men who come to the poetry brothel who, you know, cringe when they hear the word whore, you know, say, why am I cringing when I hear that when a woman is like calling herself that and I'm, you know, totally okay going to a strip club. You know, it's like it's supposed to make people kind of think about these things. And you know, I would say that, you know, we feel mixed emotions about using it sometimes because we do know that it has like hurt and triggered certain people, particularly sex workers. And that's actually something that we are planning to kind of work more and more to work with the sex work community to help uplift and empower them. It's our goal for 2018 to find some nonprofit charity organizations that we can work with to help fight for the rights of sex workers and offer them services, and also just any sort of community that's felt marginalized by their sexuality. We really do want to be a place for those people. And if anyone who identifies in that way, who happens to be listening to this show, like, I really hope that you'll come to the poetry brothel, because we want to hear from you. We've actually recently started offering 10 pay what you can tickets to every poetry brothel event, because we want to be as inclusive as possible. And we realize that, like, not everyone can afford to pay $40. So we do want to bring the people in that that do feel uncomfortable with the things that we're doing, because I want people to understand that we're fighting for you, you know.
So. And my experience of going to the thing and going to the holiday party and having experience in the atmosphere, I think it's very much about kind of understanding and being reflective on that vocabulary, because they do include, you know, kind of information about consent and about all these kind of things. So it's very clear to me that the organization is moving towards, you know, very much empowerment, very much reflective kind of meditative space within sexuality, within intimacy, be able to reflect on that and become more aware, heightenedly, or mindful of how we, you know, in that space, maybe we have a certain vocabulary, but being also being bringing it out to outside to know how we're using these words and how we're using these intimacies in our own life. And I think that space might be a good way to reflect on that. So that's very good. But so now also finally, we'll just close out with kind of talking a little bit about kind of the business aspects and stuff like that, and how you were talking a little bit about what your trajectory is for the business, you know, moving forward. You talked a little bit about that with the idea of connecting with charity organizations and such. Mm-hmm. But is there any other goals or any other set goals for 2018? We just passed the new year and 10th anniversary. So if you have any set other set goals or objectives that you have,
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I touched on it briefly, but we definitely want to be doing more and more private events and working with businesses to just expand poetry even more broadly. So we had a really great experience this year at New York Fashion Week, typing poetry out for people. And, you know, like, my partner and I both wrote poems for, like, Edward Norton and stuff like that. And everybody just had so much fun. And we were like, we need to be doing more of this kind of thing if we really want to bring poetry to as many people as possible. So we're definitely looking to do more private events. And one of our more kind of long-term goals for the next 10 years is to establish an upstate residency program for writers. So that's something that we're actively going to be working towards. We are working on developing a capital campaign right now in order to buy property up there. So, and we had a really phenomenal year at the New York City Poetry Festival last year as well. 14,000 people came, which was about 10,000 more than we'd had previous years. So the expansion was kind of crazy. So we're really excited to kind of capitalize on that and just kind of broaden and expand the festival more and more.
Great, great.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. And if you have any closing thoughts, otherwise we'll just well, in the interview now, but I just wanted to say that I definitely think you're coming up. You have several events coming up in New York. You have the 10th anniversary, but I think this episode will air after that, the 10th anniversary party. But also in February, I believe you have.
We have a February 13th event. It's kind of a Mardi Gras Valentine's Day hybrid. It's called Carnival of Love. So that should be fun. And we're doing... We've always joked about wanting to do an alien-themed poetry brothel, and we're finally going to do it on March 6th at House of Yes. We're doing the poetry brothel Area 51, excellent. Expect a lot of extraterrestrials and FBI agents.
Excellent. Thanks so much. I really appreciate this interview. Thank you.
Yeah, Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
This ends the interview portion of the Truth to Power show. Before we begin our song from Song of the Week, I'd like to share a little bit from my experiences in my life and talk a little bit about the Landmark Forum, which is an organization that presents teachings on ontology, or the state of being, and explores how our state of being is informed by language, how language is the key to understanding or observing how events occur in language or through language. And they use a lot of techniques that are presented over the course of a three-day course that goes from 9 a.m. in the morning until 11 p.m. at night, or 10 p.m. at night, sorry. Also, I want to put that in the context that I took that course over January 5th to 7th. In the context of my understanding, it was very much a powerful experience. And my understanding comes from 10 years in Buddhism, in Yukonapa tradition, where I explored Buddhist ideas of emptiness, the theory of the foundational nature of reality, that mind creates reality, and a series of conversations that are upcoming in the next month or so. I'm going to be talking to a lot of people about these transformative understandings of their experiences, from their experiences, and leading up to a conversation, more direct conversation, about these themes and about these ideas, and putting into context, understanding that our experiences are changeable, and that we have the power to transform our life, that we have the power to make breakthroughs, that we have the power to transform circumstances that we are in, that we are not powerless, that we can be empowered. In that regard, I'd like to extend a special invitation to our listeners to write in to truthtopowershow@gmail.com and give me feedback, or tell me how you create this series in your mind, how it affects you, to be able to understand what impact this series is having on its listeners, for me to access the experiences of those who are listening and be able to invite a person who writes in and gives their experience to come on the show and to co-create the show with me, to be able to understand how you see me, whether you've experienced me in person or in the interactions or just through the show, and be able to explore your own journey and your own understandings. You may listen to the Bushwick Junction interview I did as well, where I was a guest on Bushwick Junction and explored my own life narrative, which I've come to understand is part of a larger perspective that our lives are like dreamlike, have dreamlike qualities, that things in the past lose their grip when we see the dreamlike quality of the past. And we're able to understand or perceive that the only eternal moment is that moment that we're existing in right now. And I invite people to be able to articulate that through language and create that being, create that space of being in which we exist in, and create a space for that moment of being in the present, of being here now. I would like to invite them also to, I'd like to invite you guys also to think about, where is this podcast? Like, where is the experience of this podcast? That the podcast exists in a space between us, that it exists in your mind, that exists through your mind, that inhabits the vessel of your mind, and that it fills it with the voice, the transmission that I'm trying to give you, that whether or not that communication is happening is up to you to perceive, up to you to listen. And I hope that that is communicating something. And I hope that you'll reach out to me on truthtopowershow@gmail.com and express that in words, to articulate that in words, the experience that you're having. So we're going to be listening to a song from I Am the Polish Army, which is a song called You Don't Know. And it kind of leads up to the next series of episodes, which build up towards a place of acknowledging that I don't know. And from that place of I don't know, from that place of acknowledging that the events around me, the events I experience, the circumstances around me, and the events I experience are empty of meaning, that they're without inherent meaning, that I can choose to give them meaning based on what I wish my life to be, what I wish this experience to be. And I wish this experience to be something that transforms your life. I wish this experience to be something that allows freedom to inhabit your space of being. And that powerful wish, that powerful desire is something that I want to convey to you and I want to impart on you, and that, that the possibility that it can happen. So once again, I invite you to write in to truthpowershow@gmail.com and express to me your wish for this show and your wish for yourself. And on our schedule on January 25th is poet Diana Delgado, wherein we'll be discussing her poetry and experiences. On February 1st, we'll be discussing with poet Anum Sitar, her perspectives on the presentation of poetry and how poetry could, her vision for how poetry can be presented. And then on February 8th, I'm going to be having a transformative conversation with poet and translator Claire Van Winkle about language, a little more specifically on language, leading up to the elemental questions that I'm going to be asking Rick Giroux, the question of identity, of who am I and why am I here? And we're going to be getting pretty deep in that conversation. So I hope you'll tune in. You'll stay tuned for the series of talks. So I really appreciate you listening and thank you very much. And now our song of the week by I Am the Polish Army, called You Don't Know.
You slam on your reverse, back up on Great Jones. Keep driving forward, get to my ex's house. Downstairs, in the dark. When I went down, he said, welcome to my world. He sat me down and asked me everything he could. So to say no, you don't know, you don't know. Now 3 years later, I'm a tourist in town.
This ends the program of the Truth to Power show on Radio Free Brooklyn. But as an addendum or postscript, I'd like to read a passage from Swan's Way, Marcel Proust. I'm going to begin with the opening passages. So part one, Cambrai. For a long time, I would go to bed early. Sometimes, the candle barely out, my eyes closed so quickly that I did not have time to tell myself I'm falling asleep. And half an hour later, the thought that it was time to look for sleep would awaken me. I would make as if to put away the book, which I imagined was still in my hands, and to blow out the light. I had gone on thinking while I was asleep about what I had just been reading, but these thoughts had taken a rather peculiar turn. It seemed to me that I myself was the immediate subject of my book, a church, a quartet, the rivalry between Francis and I and Charles V. This impression persists for some moments after I awoke. It did not offend my reason, but LASIK scales upon my eyes and prevented them from registering the fact that the candle was no longer burning. Then it would begin to seem unintelligible, as the thoughts of a previous existence must be after reincarnation. The subject of my book would separate itself from me, leaving me free to apply myself to it or not. At the same time, my sight would return, and I would be astonished to find myself in a state of darkness, pleasant and restful enough for my eyes, but even more perhaps for my mind, to which it would appear incomprehensible, without a cause, something dark indeed. I would ask myself what time it could be. I could hear the whistling of trains, which, now nearer and now further off, punctuating the distance like a note of a bird in a forest, showed me in perspective the deserted countryside through which a traveler is hurrying towards a nearby station, and the path he has taken will be engraved in his memory by the excitement induced by strange surroundings, by unaccustomed activities, by the conversation he has had, and the farewells exchanged beneath the unfamiliar lamp that still echoes in his ears amid the silence of the night and the happy prospect of being home again. I would lay my cheek gently against the comfortable cheeks of my pillow, as plump and fresh as the cheeks of childhood. I would strike a match and look at my watch, nearly midnight, the hour when an invalid who has been obligated to sit out on a journey and to sleep in a strange hotel, awakened by a sudden spasm, sees with glad relief a streak of daylight shadow showing under his door. Thank God, it is morning. The servants will be about in a minute. He can ring and someone will come to look after him. The thought of being assaged gives him strength to endure his pain. He's certain he heard footfalls. They come nearer and then die away. The ray of light beneath his door is extinguished. It is midnight. Someone has just turned down the gas. The last servant has gone to bed, and must lie all night suffering without remedy. I would fall asleep again, and therefore thereafter would reawaken for short snatches only, just long enough to hear the regular creaking of the wainscot, or to open my eyes to stare at the shifting kaleidoscope of the darkness, to savor in a momentary glimmer of consciousness the sleep which lay heavily upon the furniture, the room, that whole of which I have formed no more than a small part, and whose insensibility I should very soon return to share. Or else, while sleeping, I drifted back to an early stage in my life, now forever outgrown, and come under the thrall of my childish terrors, such that an old terror of my great uncle's pulling my curls would effectually dispelled on that day, the dawn of a new era to me.